the power to actually give them a full programming language, you're going to find people going, hey, if I can do good things, I can also do bad things, because I'm not limited. Well, not necessarily, because let's say that I never use PowerPoint, okay, but I use Excel a lot. What it does is it gives the virus a capability of spreading very rapidly through a lot of different people. Let's say Mark here uses PowerPoint, Excel, and Word. Right? Every time he's launched a program, that macro virus has not just gone to his Excel. It's hit every single document he's opened. His docs, his PowerPoint presentations, and his Excels. Which basically means that he has to send his spreadsheet to his boss for his expenses, and he's sending some slides out to a guide so he can teach a class across the country, and he's got some Word documents that he's sending to his lawyer. That virus is everywhere. Yeah. And when they start doing harmful things with that replication capabilities, you're talking something very scary.
Just as a side comment, we all know how consistent Microsoft code is. So the system calls for Excel, and the capabilities of Excel, PowerPoint, Word are all slightly different if you use PPE. So
right.
To be able to do that, embed that, and send it off, somebody has to sit down and
yeah, many of the calls in each sequence is different, but there's also a lot of calls that are right on the dollar. I mean, just exactly the same. Like file,
yeah.
You know, del, delete all files. Yeah, it's very yucky, you know. But remember, a lot of viruses are time reframed. In other words, because a virus is useless, you know, to the creator if it can't go anywhere. So a lot of them were like Michelangelo is a perfect example. Michelangelo was the one that put McAfee on the map, literally. I almost got fired because they were talking about it at lunch, and they said, yeah, you know, Michelangelo put McAfee on the map. It what's made the company what it is today. I said, really, how long did it take John to write it? They were unamused. And they glared at me, and I was like, it was a joke, I was kidding. Now, on a side note, I can contest that one of the interesting things when I worked at this company is they would not hire anybody who had ever written a virus. They had a guy come in, and the guy was amazing. He was a great coder. And he made this slip, and he said, so have you ever written a virus? He goes, oh, I wrote one or two. And the guy just sunk his head, and he goes, I can't hire you. Writing a virus, if you work at McAfee, is grounds for dismissal, instantaneous. They do not joke around about it at all. I saw a hand up back there. Okay. Side note, I really liked working there. It was a good company. Have I ever written a virus? Never. I have never written a virus. Can I write a virus? Absolutely. But I'm more fascinated by how they work, not by causing people grief. At the bottom here, I show that several of the macro viruses use the normal dot dot file. Why is this? Who can tell me why most of them hit normal dot dot?
Because all the documents start with
that. Absolutely. So, if we know that all new files start with normal dot dot, how can we tell if we have a macro virus? Anybody? Check out the normal dot dot. Look at it. Keep an idea of a record. If you go to a lot of the different virus websites that talk about different viruses. By the way, if you go to a virus website and it's not a well-known virus website, it's not usually a good idea to download a remover from that website. No joke. I know several people who've actually downloaded the removers, and the removers themselves were infected with viruses. A lot of these sites will actually tell you the specific macro virus and how to detect through the normal dot dot, saying, hey, if you see this string and you see this string, you have this virus. So it's usually a good habit just every so often to look in there and see if you see anything different. If something looks funky, it's usually a good idea not to send any files to anybody. Not size. When you, if you view the file itself, it actually has scripting in it. You know, little keys. No. It actually states, it's almost in English. And then you'll see something and then going, that really looks wrong. That doesn't make any sense. And then you'll go, there's probably a reason why that doesn't make sense. Because all they are is little calls.
I think we started with the file size.
Oh, the file size?
It
really depends on the box, because some things will actually modify the normal dot dot, and it's legitimate. Some people, I do. All right, let's talk about fakes and false alarms. There are tons and tons and tons of false alarms in this, and are going rampant. Who here actually got hit by good times? Now, the problem with a lot of the fakes is that they themselves can be considered viruses, because they cause widespread panic. They cause a lot of people to get up, in hatred and fear. And one of the worst things is they chew up bandwidth, because you got some person who says, oh my God, there's this good times thing out there, and I'm going to send it to 4,000 of my friends and tell them to forward it to everybody they know. Regardless if I get it back about 60 times myself. And that just chews up tons of bandwidth, tons of space, slows down your 56.6 modem. It's like, oh great, I'm getting 30,000 things saying, watch out, there's this new thing out there. Remember the worm virus that just hit the market recently, the Zip thing? What was that called? It was the, Explorer Zip. That was an interesting, very interesting little virus there. Because that was actually an executable code that you actually had to, launch. But what was interesting is they used social engineering to make you do it. It was cheesy social engineering, but I thought it was actually kind of interesting. Because it said, hey, so-and-so, I got what you sent me. I'm going to get right back to you. In the meantime, check out these documents. Well, they called you by your name. People, in general, are very trusting. Hey, this guy knows me. I don't remember what the hell he's talking about, but it must be important. I mean, there was that day I was real drunk, but, maybe I should open this document. Or maybe should I, open this code. And that's how I got nailed. I don't know anyone personally who... Did anyone here actually get hit by that? Anybody? I have never met anybody who got hit by that. I know a few people did. At least it was in the media. True, yeah, I trust that. But there's a lot of fakes out there, guys. There's a lot of people sitting there going, hey, watch out for this, hey, watch out for that. And it's crap. You cannot infect your system by reading your email.
Yet.
Actually, there are some variants. There are some things out there, but they're only specific to specific operating systems and specific things. And they're very far between, and I haven't seen anyone actually get hit. That's possible. I mean, if you really stop and think about it, you're going to lose a lot of sleep. All you can do is try to stay safe, because you see, not everybody uses Outlook. Not everybody uses, what's the one I use? What do we use? Eudora. You got to remember the one thing. For a virus to be successful, it has to replicate. If it's only good for Outlook, then it's only going to infect people with Outlook, and it's not going to infect with people with Eudora or people who are reading off of Telnet or whatever. So it's not an effective virus. Unless you're going to make that virus so it'll infect every single mail system there is. I'm happy for you too. What? What do you want? Right. What about Happy 99, which actually basically replicates itself by sending emails out automatically? The problem with that is it depends on the system that you're dealing with. Yeah, that's a very, very good point. But there's also things that you have to keep in mind. My mail system is not set up to send any mail until I tell it to send mail. Okay, so if I get something that's trying to send mail, the first thing I look at it is like, hey, wait a minute, what's going on here? Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there's ways around that too. Right. I mean, I keep like a little sniffer on my box to verify what's going on with my system, because I get people who like try to like talk to my system without me knowing it too. Yes. Ooh, I was waiting for someone to bring that up. One? No, there's more than one Unix virus. There's several Unix viruses. Believe it or not, they're not very rampant. Yeah. But there's a reason why they're not very rampant. Because the people who are writing the virus are usually really into Unix and really just hate, you know, Big Blue, brother up north kind of guy. And so why would you write something for you, a virus on something you love compared to something you hate, you know? And unfortunately, it's more of a political statement for a lot of these people, you know?
Are you implying that the Unix guys are writing viruses against the Windows guys?
I'm not implying anything. Not me. No. Nope, not me, sir. You know, I heard about that too, but I never knew anyone who actually got it to work. The question was, is something with Netscape, was it 4.0? Yeah, where if you, here, you tell them. You know, it was the object tag overload where it actually opened up the extension. But I know people who tried it, and they couldn't get it to work. Yeah, I mean, it was reality-based, but I didn't know anyone who actually got it to work. And then, of course, with the new version out, you know, that ends any capabilities there. Let me talk about something other than 95. Something that I discovered and played around with and found out by accident that kind of bugged me is Windows NT, especially NT 4.0, if you actually format the whole drive NTFS, it is impossible for you to get a boot sector virus. And someone tell me why. Aside from Mark. No. What? There's no FAT file. Well, that's true. But why would it be impossible for you to be infecting the boot drive, you know, sector of your hard drive with an NTFS partition? Nobody know? NT does not allow real mode access. To touch the boot record, you need real mode access. So for years, or at least for quite a while, I was thinking, hey, I'm safe. I don't have a FAT partition. You know, I don't have a boot drive that's FAT. My whole drive is NTFS. I can't get a boot sector virus. Wrong. First thing I tried to do is I tried to take an infected diskette, you know, a boot disk, just a regular boot disk, put it in the drive, and boot up and see if I can infect the drive that way. Guess what? No. It doesn't see the drive. The drive is completely and utterly invisible. Can't see the drive, can't infect the drive. All right, so far I think I'm pretty safe. Well, there's one thing called an NT boot disk, where you actually load the drivers onto a diskette off of a FAT formatted diskette, that when you put it in there and boot up, it'll actually let you see the NTFS drive. And this is good if your NT crashes and you need to remove files from the NT partition. The problem with this is yes, it can see the drive and it makes the drive visible. I then infected the diskette with a boot sector virus. And then I took that diskette, because all I had to do was put it into a machine that's infected, to a directory. It infected the boot sector of that diskette. I put it into the NT drive. I booted up, and I wiped out my machine in one fell swoop.
Please don't stone me, but it's a Microsoft's credit. They do say to write and take.
Yeah, but there's problems with that. Some software won't work if that is write protected. Okay? Right, and also, if that is write protected and your drive crashes, you can't get your data off with that boot disk. So now you're dealing with a catch-22, aren't you? I can either write protect it and protect it all the way, but if my drive crashes and I need to get something right now and I don't have the time to wait 4 hours for my backups, I have to use that disk.
Well, what I'm saying is if you keep it write protected the entire time except when you're using it for the recovery, the chance of...
But you have to get in to unwrite protect it. No, I mean, you have to get onto the hard drive to unwrite protect it. Yeah, but you know what? I can infect I can infect a floppy disk that's been write and write protected very easily. Oh, I thought you were talking about write protecting the hard drive, which you can do. Write protect your floppy, sure. But you know what? There's viruses out there that will sit there and override that and infect the diskette regardless, because that's what they're designed to do. I can format a write-protected floppy. You think that's going to stop a virus? Most, yes. Some, no. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Yes. Yes. The virus makes calls. It says ignore any write protection. There's software that will specifically, duplication software that's designed to duplicate write protected to disk, because it says ignore the write protection altogether. I mean, it's just a series of calls. And the computer says, I don't care if it's write protected or not, just ignore it. So it happens. Anyhow, on that NT factor, everybody was yelling that it's impossible to infect the NT drive with a boot sector virus, and I found out they were wrong. Sir? Ma'am? Sorry. Have I ever used Potmail to help, you know...
Potmail.
Oh, I'm going Potmail. No, because there's a lot of virus software out there that you can throw on the server that does it for you a lot easier. And actually, a lot of the companies now, what they do is they have the software that goes onto the server, and what it does is it scans every piece of email for attachments, looks through the attachments, and actually scans the attachments as they come in for viruses before it even hits your users. Does that mean you're safe? No. It helps a lot. Have I had experience finding viruses on what platforms? Linux platforms? Unix platforms? No, because there's only a handful of them. I've fussed with them, but the thing is the most of the viruses that were written for Unix won't work today because of the version changes. Yeah.
One of the people that work with actually runs an ISP for funny problem out of his bedroom. And he uses Procmail. Basically what he does is he runs filters on executable files and puts them in a safe zone, and he sends a message to the user saying that you've got an executable file that's sitting in a safe zone you want to download. That way it's like a double check. Somebody has to intentionally download that executable. But as far as using it to scan for viruses, you know, that's pretty labor intensive to set that stuff up, and you just to push that up on the user.
Yeah. It sucks up a lot of kernel time. Yeah, a couple of viruses that I did see for Unix wouldn't work today. You know, they make special calls, specific things for specific versions, like the old DOS viruses that won't work today. I haven't seen any new Unix viruses at all, and if someone's seen some, please come and talk to me about it, because I'd be kind of fascinated to find out. Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yes, this is also very true. You don't see a lot of people bringing diskettes from home onto a Unix box. You know? Any other questions? I'm sorry. Go ahead. I see what you're saying. In other words, like, you know, it may be someone sending doc files across, but they're actually hitting a Unix server. You know? Right, exactly. Yeah, right now, like Mark stated, it's so intensive to try to actually track down the viruses that way. Because there's not a lot of things that are written for it for automation purposes. For the Windows base, there are so many things that are written specifically to do that. You know, it's a little bit more difficult. I know a lot of places that still use Unix servers to transfer mail because, well, hell, it's just better. But it makes it a little bit more difficult, which is why you put the software on the individual unit systems also. Yeah. Macs are coming back?
Yeah.
Oh, that was an Apple company. I remember them.
They used to use the resource for it and spread viruses out.
Right.
Do you see that as being a problem?
Well, let me rephrase that. Yeah, that could be a problem. The reason why I think that could be a problem is because it used to be Macs were on little Apple Talk networks or on individual systems, and now the Macs that they're coming out with are designed specifically to jump on the internet in 5 minutes, and that could be a different problem. One of the most popular viruses way back when for Macintosh was the Rabbit virus. Anybody ever heard of that or seen it? Rabbit, raise your hand.
Okay.
Yeah. And you would actually see a little rabbit running across your screen, and then someone else's screen, and then somebody else's screen, and it would actually run through the network. It was harmless, but it was like, what the hell? It's like a little bunny. It was like, nah, I didn't see that. Someone else see a rabbit? Yeah, I saw a rabbit. All right. My talk's about over here. I appreciate you all coming. Is there any further questions? One last question. Yes. You don't see a whole lot of those rampant in the wild. I know of a couple cases where some viruses are designed as like sniffers, where they'll actually gather data and bring it back to the developer of it. But those still require like an executable on the user's code, on the user's system. Some people use them for capturing passwords and keystrokes.
Java?
I think. You know what? I haven't investigated Java too much on the vectors dealing with viruses, so I really can't give that answer. I wouldn't think so, and because it's the thing is when people write viruses, most of them send them directly to the antivirus companies direct before they even send them out to the wild, because it's them going, hey, yeah, try to break this one, see if you can figure out how to remove this one. So yeah, it's ego, it's pure ego. We get tons of little packages going, yeah, bet you guys can't do this, and then we stay up 24 hours, you know, and have a remover on the network the next day going, there you go, you know. Hey, I never got overtime for that either. Well, that's it for me, people. Thank you very much. I appreciate you coming to my talk.